Today we are going to review a story in 2 Kings chapter 4, if you'd like to go there. Now this story, I had a lot of questions when I was putting this together, sitting with God yesterday, because there's a whole bunch of nuggets of details, and that's what's really interesting about the Bible. Sometimes there's really vague stories, and you just kind of get the beginning and the end, it seems, and nothing in between. And then you're like, huh, I wonder how that came about, but okay. And then other times it drops these little details in there, and you're like, well, why did that make it in? Like, what is that little detail? And there's a lot of details here and a lot of little nuggets that I think we could go off on a whole Bible study just on these 34 verses that we're going to go through. So we're going to keep it high level today. We're only going to talk about three major points of the story. And I know I'm going to dig into these scriptures a lot more, and I encourage all of you to, because there's little nuggets and I'm sure symbolism in a lot of things. So we're going to talk about three main themes today. One, God knows our desires, our deepest, darkest desires that we don't even tell people because we're just like, if that came true, I would almost not believe it. Our deepest, darkest desires, God knows. Our deepest, maybe not darkest, like they could, but he knows those deep desires that you're too afraid to speak out. God knows them. Having faith in hard times and situations can be difficult, but it'll carry you through those hard times and situations and allow you to be able to do what you need to do in the time being. And number three, the power of prayer and intercession is beyond our comprehension. Absolutely beyond it. So those are the three things we're going to focus on today. So one day, Elisha went to the town of Shunem. A wealthy woman lived there, and she urged him to come to her home for a meal. After that, whenever he passed that way, he would stop there for something to eat. She said to her husband, "I am sure this man who stops in from time to time is a holy man of God. Let's build a small room for him on the roof and furnish it with a bed, a table, a chair, and a lamp. Then he will have a place to stay whenever he comes by." So super generous, super nice. One day, Elisha returned to Shunem, and he went up to this upper room to rest. He said to his servant Gehazi, "Tell the woman from Shunem, I want to speak to her." When she appeared, Elisha said to Gehazi, "Tell her, we appreciate the kind concern you have shown us. What can we do for you? Can we put in a good word for you to the king or the commander of the army?" See, Elisha was a great man of God. He was actually a prophet. Pretty much everybody knew him of the land, and he was a predecessor after Elijah. And Elijah was this great and awesome prophet, and they said that Elisha would be even greater than Elijah. So that's where he's like, I got the hookup between the king and the commanders of the army here. So basically what it's trying to say is like, I can bring you anything you absolutely want. I have those connections. She says, "No," she replied. "My family takes good care of me." Later, Elisha asked Gehazi, "What can we do for her?" Gehazi replied, "She doesn't have a son, and her husband is an old man." "Call her back again," Elisha told him. When the woman returned, Elisha said to her as she stood in the doorway, "Next year, at this time, you will be holding a son in your arms." "No, my lord," she cried. "Oh, man of God, don't deceive me and get my hopes up like that." Her response is, "Oh, no, my lord. Oh, man of God, don't deceive me and get my hopes up like that." You think her deep desire that she won't speak is to have a child? A little bit. But sure enough, the woman soon became pregnant, and at that time the following year she had a son, just as Elisha had said. One day when her child was older, he went out to help his father, who was working with the harvesters. Suddenly he cried out, "My head hurts, my head hurts." His father said to one of the servants, "Carry him home to his mother." So the servant took him home, and his mother held him on her lap. But around noontime, he died. She carried him up and laid him on the bed of the man of God, then shut the door and left him there. She sent a message to her husband, "Send one of the servants and a donkey so that I can hurry to the man of God and come right back." "Why go today?" he asked. "It's neither a new moon festival nor a Sabbath." But she said, "It will be all right." Kind of a weird interaction when your kid just died. She didn't say, "Oh, by the way, you know, he died." She just says, it'll be all right. He clearly doesn't know because he's talking about festivals and Sabbaths. Like, why do you need the man of God unless we're doing some kind of festival, right? It's kind of weird interaction, but she's like, it'll be all right. So she saddled the donkey and said to the servant, hurry, don't slow down unless I tell you to. As she approached the man of God at Mount Carmel, Elisha saw her in the distance. He said to Gehazi, look, the woman from Shunem is coming. Run out to meet her and ask her, is everything all right with you, your husband and your child? Yes, the woman told Gehazi, everything is fine. But when she came to the man of God at the mountain, she fell to the ground before him and caught hold of his feet. Gehazi began to push her away, but the man of God said, leave her alone. She is deeply troubled, but the Lord has not told me what it is. Then she said, did I ask for a son, my Lord? And didn't I say, don't deceive me and get my hopes up? Then Elisha said to Gehazi, get ready to travel, take my staff and go. Don't talk to anyone along the way. Go quickly and lay the staff on the child's face. But the boy's mother said, as surely as the Lord lives and you yourself live, I won't go home unless you go with me. So Elisha returned with her. Gehazi hurried on ahead and laid the staff on the child's face, but nothing happened. There was no sign of life. He returned to meet Elijah and told her, the child is still dead. When Elisha arrived, the child was indeed dead, lying there on the prophet's bed. He went in alone and shut the door behind him and prayed to the Lord. Then he laid down on the child's body, placing his mouth on the child's mouth, his eyes on the child's eyes, and his hands on the child's hands. And as he stretched out on him, the child's body began to grow warm again. Elisha got up, walked back and forth across the room once, and then stretched himself out again on the child. This time, the boy sneezed 7 times and opened his eyes. Then Elisha summoned Gehazi, called the child's mother, he said, and when she came in, Elisha said, here, take your son. She fell at his feet and bowed before him, overwhelmed with gratitude. Then she took her son in her arms and carried him downstairs. So a pretty good story. Let's pick some stuff apart. So God knows our deepest desires. Nowhere in the scriptures could I find that the woman asked God for a child or even has a conversation with somebody else about wanting a child. However, we can discern from her reaction, oh Lord, no, don't deceive me with this, that was something that she really wanted. On a side note, probably maybe another sermon, isn't it unbelievable sometimes what God gives us? I don't know, I'm flabbergasted from time to time. I'll be like, wait a minute, what did I do? Well, nothing, because there's nothing I can do to get the grace and love of God, right? He just gives it. But if you're struggling and you know that there's something out there that's deep within you that you desire, believe that God knows. And God's working it out in its rightful time. So it doesn't tell us in the scriptures how long she's been married to her husband or how long they've tried to have children or not. I would imagine it would be quite some time with her husband being quite aged. And then being quite wealthy, they've built up their business, right? So God knows our deepest desires. He knows. Having faith in hard times and or a crisis, this is absolutely 100% a crisis. Everybody can agree upon that, right? The son has died. Where does she run to? The man of God. Now, back in the Old Testament, you had to go through prophets. You had to have the intercessory. Thank you. Intercedory. That's what I was going to go with. Didn't seem right. You had to have that intercessor. You had to have the prophets. So that's her indication that at the first sign of a crisis, she runs to God. That's that symbolism there. So she runs to God. And what's so interesting, this is one of the parts I have so many questions. This conversation with her and her husband just is weird to me. And I read it, I don't know how many times, trying to figure it out. Send one of the servants and a donkey so that I can hurry to the man of God and come right back. Why go today, he asked. It's neither a new moon festival nor a Sabbath. It'll be all right. Didn't we just read that her kid died in her arms? Like, could you imagine being a parent and you're holding your kid and your kid literally dies right there in your hands? And you turn to your spouse, it'll be all right. That lady has faith. And she already knows that God has her. She already knows. Now, there's some actions that need to happen, and she needs to go to God, and she needs to pray to God, and she needs to do those actions to show her faith or be tested that along the way she's still going to go. But she knows, before she goes to the man of God, she knows that that kid is going to be raised from the dead. That's my conclusion and take on it there. Otherwise, why would it be, it's going to be all right? Why would you say it's going to be all right? It'll be all right. She didn't even say, hey, the kid's dead, but it'll be all right. She just says, it'll be all right. If he's going to be alive in a couple hours, why even burden? My husband is maybe what she thought. Do you ever have times? So this is, why does she lie to Gehazi too? Right? Because he comes in here and he says, is everything all right with you, your husband, and your child? Yes. Everything is fine. Everything is fine. As Deacon Cindy talked about, it's fine, Mom. It's fine. It was a fine day. It was fine. How many times do we say that when something is completely and 100% wrong, we put on the, it's fine. Everything's fine. I'm fine. Why are you asking? It's fine, right? We have those times where we're simply holding it together. We're simply holding it together. And so it's fine, I'm fine, everything's fine, is our way of, don't let me acknowledge this thing right now or I am going to break and I still have a couple things to do, like groveling at this guy's feet and making him come back to my home. Right? So she's holding it together. And we do that until we don't, right? It either piles on too much where we hit our breaking point, or as in this story, we see that one person that we can't put on the I'm fine front to. And that's what happened here. She saw she was headed. She knew she needed this person, and she fell down on his feet and lost it all. But she held it together for that period of time because she knew that she had actions to take. Her faith guided her to seek the man of God, to seek God. It will be all right. But you see, we have emotions, right? Like they're part of the part of me that I don't like very much is the whole feeling things, because it prohibits me sometimes from being efficient and effective, and that's like my whole thing in life. Sorry. It's my whole thing in life, and then these emotions start to come. I used to say there's three things I don't talk about, and feelings was one of them. I've been growing a little bit, and I understand that these things happen, and they actually help us get through things. Did you know that? I might be the only one that doesn't know that or is trying to figure that out. Feelings help you get through things. Because what's going to happen when her child gets raised, if she didn't let all those emotions out to the man of God, I could just imagine being a parent. That kid would be by my side all the time. I'd have a little bubble, and I'd be like, okay. And he got heat stroke. Do you think he would go outside at all anymore after that? He was in the field, head pain. I'm guessing maybe heat stroke or something like that. Like, oh, no, you're inside now. Like, this is, see these four walls? This is where you live now. There's no more sunshine for you. There's no more whatever, right? Very healthy reaction. I mean, and he's going to live a great life staying right there in the home. It'll be awesome. See, she had to work through those feelings so she can get over those fear too and understand that even after this, God's going to protect my son and protect my kid. Right? Because we can't live in little bubbles. And we can't force other people to live in bubbles for their good. Right? So she had to work through those feelings, which is why I think she held it together and then was just like, like all over the man of God, just letting it all out so she can work with it so then she can move forward. That's what faith does too. It propels us. It's like a slingshot. So the power of prayer and intercession. So the man of God goes in that room. He closes the door behind him because he's going to fully focus on praying. Mouth to mouth, eyes to eyes, hands to hands, he lays on that boy. Symbolism that I pick out of that is when we have somebody that's hurting or something that we really need to intercede and pray on behalf, we have to meet that person where they are. And that boy is lying there, and he comes face to face. He meets him where he is so he can pray with him, intercede with him, sympathize with him. So sometimes we need to meet where we are. We need to face the situation head on. Don't face the situation like this. That's kind of difficult. I'm going to deal with you, right? We need to face that situation head on. We need to be faithful and know that God is there for us and face it head on. Elisha then stretches himself on the boy, but what is he really doing? He's stretching himself through prayer. Every time we pray and we give God a little bit more of our heart and a little bit more of our life, we're stretching our faith. You might used to be like this, you know, I'll pray for you. And then something happens, your faith grows a little bit, so he stretches himself. Because Elisha has seen an individual be raised from the dead before, but Elijah was the one that interceded and raised that widow's son. So he's seen Elisha do it, his mentor, the person he follows. But he hasn't done it up to this point on his own. So there could be some little doubts in his head, right? So through this, it's a symbolism of stretching yourself. And as a church of spiritual enrichment and growth, which is our vision statement, we need to stretch ourselves as well. Think of how this experience would have grown Elisha closer to God and be a better prophet and a better man of God. My other question was, he's there, he's stretching, he's praying, and then he's like, I gotta walk this off. He does a walk back and forth in the room. Just one. It says that he walked back and forth across the room once. Why did he need a breather? He's raising somebody from the dead. The boy's body is starting to get warm. Like, wouldn't you think, like, I'm almost there? I would say this. Even a great prophet sometimes needs a moment. Because some of this stuff in life is deep and it's heavy. So I think he was like, holy cow, the boy's getting warm. Okay. Take a deep breath. God is awesome, and this is overwhelming. Okay. And then back to it. It's okay to take a moment in life, but then go back to it. I don't know if that's exactly what he was doing. That's kind of my interpretation and how God kind of led me. There could be a lot of things going on, but that's what the message is for you today, is that it's okay to take a moment. And you're not a horrible Christian if you stop in prayer and it's not quite answered yet and then you take a break. Take a moment. Take a deep breath. Maybe accept what God is happening. Because, I mean, how exciting would it be? You're praying over this person that's absolutely 100% dead, and then all of a sudden you start to feel the body heat of that individual. That had to be super overwhelming. And it's okay to step back and be like, God, you're awesome. Okay, let's do this, right? And then the boy sneezes 7 times. 7, as we know, is a number indicating completeness. It is finished. The boy is now complete. He's made whole. And he opens his eyes. Jesus said on the cross, it is finished. Then 3 days later, he opened his eyes. A little correlation for another day, but I just want to put that nugget there. So, really great story. I encourage you to dig into it more. And I was talking to a friend yesterday about these scriptures because I was, there's just so many questions about the little details of the room and the chair and the lamp, and there's so many symbolisms with that, and it's spoken in the Bible so many times, and just so, there's a lot going on with these scriptures. And I was all over the place, and I was speaking to a friend, and she's like, "Oh, you're working on your sermon?" I said, "Yeah." She goes, "What are the scriptures for tomorrow?" And so I said, and then I said, "You got any nuggets? I'm struggling here. I'm going off in like a gazillion paths because that can happen, right?" And she goes, so she read it, and she responded. This is how she summed it up. Trust God all the way through. If he brings you to it, he will bring you through it. My sermon could have been done in like 30 seconds. Trust God all the way through. If he brings you to it, he will bring you through it. That stopped me in my tracks right then and there. Got me focused again. Because sometimes even when you're reading the Word of God, the devil's like trying to take you all over the place sometimes, right? Like you're just going all over the place. That brought me back. Trust God all the way through. Yeah, we're closing up. If you guys want to come up to do the song. Trust God all the way through. If he brings you to it, he will bring you through it. Why would God bring you to something to have you fail or be destroyed? He wouldn't. Because God always wants what's best for us. He wants to bless us. He wants to love us. He wants his mercy to just rain down upon us all over the place. So if you're struggling with something, if God brought you to it, God's going to bring you through it. And remember, sometimes we have to stretch ourselves. When you first start stretching, it's not always a pleasant feeling sometimes, is it? When you've had an injury or something and you're trying to stretch, or you've had surgery or something and you're doing those exercises and you're stretching that shoulder to try to get that range of motion, it's not always a pleasant feeling, but at the end, you feel a lot better. So trust God all the way through. If he brings you to it, he will bring you through it. Amen.